Hi, this is the abominable CPA.
When you're not filing your taxes for the upcoming deadline, you should be listening to Solar Monster Sounds Off. And that's an audit.
It's business time, baby.
The Solar Monster Sounds Off.
My client!
Mama Monster!
Conquered history!
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
He's fat!
You haven't been beat up properly!
Woo! Oh, this was not the weekend for me to lose an hour of sleep for daylight savings. This is episode 538 of the Solar Monster Sounds Off here for Sunday, March 11, 2018. I am the Solar Monster. I gotta thank one of our listeners, Carlos. He tweeted me a few weeks ago telling me about this show on Netflix called Money Heist. It's a Spanish language show. You can watch it with subtitles, or they have English dubbed over the show, and you can watch it that way, but don't ever do that. Always go for the subtitles. Trust me, it's much better that way. Anyway, fantastic show. Basic premise is a bunch of robbers and low-level criminals come together to rob the Royal Mint of Spain, and they lock themselves in with hostages. The actual name of the show is La Casa de Papel, which translates to House of Paper. But I guess that was too close to House of Cards, I guess, maybe, or something like that. So they went with Money Heist, which is a terrible name. But if you have a Netflix subscription, give it a watch. I think it's 13 episodes. You can knock it out in a week. Take my word for it. Good stuff. Audible's also good stuff. Our link, audibletrial.com/solomonster. will net you a 30-day trial of the Audible service, and in that time, you can cash in and get one free audio book. Audible has been a great partner to the show now for a number of years, so take advantage if you have not already done so. I don't know what you're waiting for. Audibletrial.com/Solomonster. Sign up, try it out, get yourself a free book. I think there's, I know there's over 180,000. It's got to be closer to 190 by now, so plenty to choose from. And also, I want to say thank you to everybody who has bought a shirt in our Pro Wrestling Tee store. A lot of you have picked up not just the new shirt, the Always Point to the Sign shirt. I've noticed a lot of people going old school, going back to the workout sound off shirt. Let me school you, son. All that stuff is still up there. ProWrestlingTees.com/Solomonster Sounds Off. And if you are going to New Orleans this year, I would say if you're going to buy a shirt, buy it now. It could take a few weeks to get to you, and then you can wear it to the meetup. Which we're going to be, I'm going to talk about that here in a second. But first, I want to say thank you to everybody who has made a donation to the show this week. I show my appreciation at the beginning of every podcast. This one is no different. You guys know there's a PayPal button on thesolomonster.com. $10 or more will get you a wrestling nickname. I want to say thank you to the Belgian Brute, Nicholas Overmeer. Thank you very much for your generosity. The Dark Serpent, Derek Gibbs. That meant a lot. So I know Derek is listening. Thank you. John Loose Cannon Lopez, Deadpool James Herrera, the Florida Freebird Brian Becerra, Out of Control Cody Thomas, Luis Hercules Hernandez, Beast Mode Brock Joseph, Raymond the Mountie Medina, Sean Nasty Boy Nilsson, Eugene Crazy Eyes Morgan, Aim for the Head Andrew Jorlog, Velvet Revolver Robert Murray, The Show Off Corey Van Dam, Gabriel Dirty Sanchez, I can't not help but crack a smile when I read that. I don't know what that says about me. Dan the Man Larson, Million Dollar Matthew Yanez, Thomas the Promise Murphy, the Malaysian Mastermind Samuel T, the Chicago Slayer Willie Eichard, the Columbus Destroyer John Sterniker, the Chicago Screamer Ian Noel Kamelotz, the Renton Road Warrior Taylor Schatt, Erasmo Switchblade Solis, Flyboy Jazvoni Rollins, and the judge, Justin Chance. Forget the nickname. Justin Chance is a pro wrestling name all by itself. It's a pretty badass name. And also Santino Munoz. So I want to say thank you again to everybody who has shown their support via PayPal for this podcast. I mentioned the New Orleans meetup. That is coming up on WrestleMania Sunday, April 8th, starting at 11 a.m. That'll go on for several hours at Pat O'Brien's on Bourbon Street. Right now, last I checked on the Facebook invite, which is up on the Facebook fan page, you can go ahead and RSVP there. Either if you know you're going, if you are interested in possibly going, if you're going to be in New Orleans, go to the invite and go ahead and let me know if you plan on being there. Last I checked, we had almost 80 people already signed up for the event, either confirmed or interested in going. I want to get that number up over 100, so head on over to the invite. It's on the Facebook page, and I'm sure in the days to come, I'll link to it on Twitter as well. A few notes here before I talk about Fastlane. There is a pay-per-view tonight, by the way, in case you didn't know. But I wanted to just very quickly talk about this New Japan 46th anniversary show. I know that took place this past Monday. I didn't have a chance to watch it live, but I had a lot of you telling me, oh, you got to check out some of these matches. There were some great matches, and I've really, just with everything going on, I haven't had time to watch a lot of the New Japan and the ROH stuff. And there are people who have given me a hard time about that, and I just, look, I wish I could. Please, have some mercy here. There's a lot going on right now. A lot that I can't do that I wish I could, but I did make time. I watched the last two matches on that New Japan show, which was Okada against Will Ospreay, which I loved. It was a great match. I thought the two of them worked well together. And the other one was Minoru Suzuki against Togi Makabe. And Minoru Suzuki, I have to say, in watching this match, he sure does love going for that gotch pile driver. And I know they've told that story before, at least the American announcers have. I've heard Kevin Kelly, you know, and Don Callis in the past allude to the fact, well, why does he keep going for it? He could always win in different ways, and he always goes back to the gotch. And, you know, I guess many times it backfires on him. He gets backdropped, or it just doesn't work. But he won with the move here in this match. So I like that story about how he always tries that move, even though it backfires on him probably a majority of the time. But damn it, he really loves that move. And Suzuki is just, I mean, Suzuki is just an evil SOB. I mean, truly, truly the scariest man in all of pro wrestling, I think, is Minoru Suzuki. But one thing I noticed on commentary, though, Don Callis very casually threw this out there. He very casually mentioned that Togi Makabe has a cooking show, or at least had at some point, I think, had a cooking show. Is this true? I mean, I've never heard of this before, and if so, I would like to know where I can find this cooking show so I can watch it for myself. This is the first I'm hearing of this. He just sort of casually threw it out there. So I thought that was kind of interesting. The update on Rey Mysterio per this week's Wrestling Observer is a grade 1 bicep strain. This was the injury that he suffered for Northeast Wrestling I talked about last week. So I guess if there's a tear, it's only partially torn. It's not an overly serious injury. It doesn't sound like an injury that's really going to keep him out of action hardly at all. That's great news because it should not prevent him then from wrestling Jushin Liger at that New Japan Strong Style Evolve show in Long Beach, which is coming up on the 25th. It's only a couple weeks away. That's not confirmed. He's not said anything. New Japan has not said anything one way or the other about that match changing or being canceled. But, you know, he wraps that thing up. He should be good to go. And Mysterio is still talking to WWE about a potential return. So him being hurt hasn't really changed anything. So it sounds to me like with this injury, he dodged a real bullet because this could have been a lot worse. WWE Fastlane is tonight from Columbus, Ohio. I'm letting you guys know right now there will likely be no Sound Off Extra review on YouTube for the show. I usually do them for all the pay-per-views. I have somewhere else to be tonight. I'm dealing with certain things, and so I have no idea when I'm going to be home. It could be in the middle of the pay-per-view. It could be long after the pay-per-view is over. And I have a 5 a.m. wake-up call for work. So, not looking too good right now. And I'll just say this. If I have to miss this Fastlane card, of all the pay-per-views for me to miss, if I have to miss Fastlane, I won't exactly be devastated. I didn't much care for that SmackDown show last Tuesday. Randy Orton against Jinder Mahal did not help matters. Orton just can't beat this guy. He cannot beat Jinder Mahal. He's the skip to Jinder's Barry Horowitz, if Horowitz had disgusting back knee, right? But Horowitz was smart. Remember how Horowitz used to pat himself on the back before every match when he would come out? He did that to shake all the little back knee pimples off his back. Mm-hmm. Bet you didn't know that. Now you do. I actually thought the most exciting part of SmackDown last week was the cameraman slipping on the ice. I shouldn't say this because I've taken pratfalls myself. But he slipped. He went to go walk up to, I guess they said it was a statue of Bart Starr. And they come back from commercial. You know those camera shots. They have the shots where they show the statue or the outside of the building. And for whatever reason, this guy was walking up to the statue. He slipped and he fell. And I guess it wasn't ice, it was like snow-covered marble, I think, because they interviewed this poor guy when the show was over, as if he wasn't embarrassed enough. And yeah, he took a pratfall on camera. I say let that guy write the show. Make Road Dogg a cameraman. Because I found this more entertaining than anything else. Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn on that show on Tuesday interfered in a match between AJ Styles and Dolph Ziggler. This led to Shane McMahon making it, on the spot, a fatal five-way match with all but John Cena as part of the match. So they basically gave away their pay-per-view main event on this go-home show, all so that they could do the angle that you saw at the end with Sami Zayn, who has told Kevin Owens repeatedly now over the last several weeks, I've got your back at Fastlane, I got you, if it comes down to you and I'll lay down for you. And of course, this has taken Owens by surprise. He was shocked by this great act of friendship on the part of Sami Zayn. He seemed a little cautious about it, but, you know, very appreciative. And this is the story that they've been telling for at least the last 2 weeks, maybe three. Okay. So then here on this show, 6 days before the pay-per-view, Sami Zayn turns on Kevin Owens and Huluva kicks him in the face and pins him. Now, that's not to say that we couldn't see this coming 5 miles away. But why wouldn't Sami Zayn wait until tonight to betray Kevin Owens? Why would he blow his master plan 6 days before the pay-per-view? Sami is not very good at this strategy thing. Either that or the writers aren't very good at writing. Probably a little bit of both. Let's run through this card here. Becky Lynch and Naomi against Carmella and Natalya. Just sort of a match they put together. I'm going to go with Becky and Naomi for the win. We have Charlotte defending her SmackDown Women's title against Ruby Riott. There's no way Charlotte is losing this match. For Charlotte to lose this match would be complete absurdity. And so she will retain her championship. The Usos defend the SmackDown... my balls dropped there a little bit. The Usos defend the SmackDown tag team... I hit puberty here on the show this week. Defend the tag team titles against The New Day. This is going to be the show... Well, I shouldn't say it's going to be the show stealer. I think the main event could very well be. But this is probably... If I'm watching this show... And that's a big if at this point. But if I am watching this show... This is probably the match right now that I'm looking forward to the most. For as many matches as they had last year... And you do get tired of it after a while. But you can almost excuse it when you have a feud this good. And going back to last year, the matches they had at SummerSlam, the Hell in a Cell match they had among, you know, the many TV matches, were all fantastic. In fact, that Hell in a Cell match may have been the best one of the bunch. So these five, worked tremendously well together. And now a few months have gone by, we had a little bit of a breather, now they're coming back to it. I'm sure all of this is going to end up leading to a multi-team match at WrestleMania anyway, so probably not the last time even still that we're going to see the Usos and the New Day together. It almost doesn't matter, I think, who wins here, because I think both are going to be involved in the same match at WrestleMania. I wouldn't take the belts off the Usos. I'd let them walk into WrestleMania as the champs. I think that's what they should do. I think the Usos will retain. I think they should retain. We have Shinsuke Nakamura taking on Rusev. The only reason for Rusev to beat Nakamura, the only way that it would make any sense at all, and I would be okay with it, is if the plan was for Rusev to be the first person to challenge Nakamura coming out of WrestleMania, if Nakamura wins, of course, and beats AJ Styles, if Rusev was going to be set up to be the number one contender coming out of WrestleMania for the championship. Because then you could at least come back to this match and say, hey, I've got a win over you. You're now the champion. That means that I'm the champion, like unofficially. Like, I've beaten you. I've proven I can beat you. I want your belt. I mean, it's a basic premise. We've seen this before. I thought that's what they were going to do in 2001 when Triple H beat Steve Austin in that Three Stages of Hell match at No Way Out. And then instead, you know, the night after WrestleMania, he teams with Austin, which was probably for him the smarter move because, let's be honest here, I mean, Steve Austin wins the championship at WrestleMania. Triple H had to be smart enough to understand that if he was a number one to challenge Austin coming out of Mania and went babyface, he probably wasn't getting that belt. So anyway, that's the only way that a Rusev win would make sense. Not that I expect it. I fully expect Nakamura to win. I just think he should at this point. I don't see Rusev, and I love what Rusev's been doing, and I think that he's been underutilized, but I don't see him challenging for the championship at WrestleMania or post-WrestleMania. And if anything, it might be better for Rusev, frankly, to be drafted over to Raw and do the Rusev Day shtick over there. I mean, I don't know that I would want to break him and Aiden English up, maybe move the whole act over. It's going to be very interesting post-WrestleMania when that belt comes off Brock Lesnar. And I know there are people listening who say, well, they're just going to do the same thing with Roman Reigns. Roman Reigns is their guy. Roman Reigns is going to be champion for 2 years. Once that belt comes off Brock Lesnar, it's almost like a chokehold that's been on Raw now for the last year. And you get to a point where nobody can honestly, believably challenge this man for the championship. Nobody expects that anybody other than Roman Reigns probably is going to walk in there and have any shot in the world at Brock Lesnar. He's beaten everybody. He's mowed down everybody. And everybody else on the show is kind of in a holding pattern. Because unless you're going to challenge for the Intercontinental title, you don't really have anything to fight for. Brock's never around anyway. And so it's really put a chokehold of sorts on Raw that I think will finally be lifted once he loses at WrestleMania. And it opens the door for other people to win the championship, to hold the championship. Right now, SmackDown, you know, that WWE title, you know, AJ has it. He should have it. I'm sure Nakamura is going to get it. But realistically, I mean, anybody on that show could win. Kevin Owens could be the champion. Sami Zayn could be the champion. Rusev, if they played their cards right, he could be the champion. On Raw, you don't have that same feeling. Brock's not even on the show every week. There's no feeling of, ooh, who's going to win the championship? I think that's a positive finally coming out of WrestleMania that we'll have. You move a guy like Rusev over to Raw, he's got as good a shot as any at least challenging for the championship. So, I still wouldn't put him over Nakamura here. I think Shinsuke gets the win. We have the U.S. title being defended. Bobby Roode defending the championship against Randy Orton. I see no reason for Randy Orton to win the title unless they want to complete this whole was a Grand Slam thing, or this is like the only major championship that Orton has never won. Who cares? I think Bobby Roode should win. I think he will win. I think we all see where this is headed at WrestleMania, which is probably a three-way with Jinder Mahal. Whatever. And the main event here is AJ Styles defending the WWE title in a six-pack challenge, although there is still time between now and tonight for them to add another three people. I don't know what you would call that kind of match. Perhaps we ought to start thinking of ideas for what a 7-8-9-man match would be called. But AJ defends against John Cena, Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, Baron Corbin, and Dolph Ziggler. So who wins here? This seems obvious to me. There's no way in hell you take that championship off AJ Styles. If you do, you deserve to be fired, or at least relieved of your duty and moved to a different department. Perhaps the person in creative who were to make that decision, if they were to take the championship off AJ, you know when a cop has like some kind of incident happens, what do? They put him on desk duty, right? Same thing here. Anybody even thinking about taking this championship off AJ Styles needs to be relegated to janitorial duty. And not only should AJ win and retain and keep that match with Shinsuke as is, but I think John Cena needs to be the one to eat that fall. Not Baron Corbin, not Dolph Ziggler, they're the obvious ones, not even Sami Zayn or Kevin Owens, it needs to be John Cena. For the story they're telling, John Cena, who beat AJ on TV last week, needs to be the one to eat the pin here in this match. And then I'm sure on TV this week, we'll see Cena probably on Raw, all dejected, no path to WrestleMania, lights go out, the gong, there's the Undertaker. Cena's already on TV saying, the match can't happen. I've been told the match is not possible. He didn't say why. He just said, the match is not possible. So it's inevitable the Undertaker will show up and we'll let him know that, in fact, the match is very possible. Like I said, not a match I want to see, but everything seems to be aligning the way that I think all of us see it aligning, and so AJ retains here on this show. And that is the card. I'm not aware of there being any kickoff match as I'm recording this that's been announced. I'm sure there will be. But there's one other thing I wanted to just mention really quickly here. I mentioned Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. And I saw the note. I think it came from The Observer this week. I saw it on a bunch of sites. So I don't know how accurate it is. I don't know. This is not gospel. It's the latest rumor in the rumor mill. You know how the rumor mill works. Sometimes it spits out good stuff. A lot of time it spits out garbage. I'm hoping this falls under the category of garbage. because the belief, the current plans, supposedly, for WrestleMania, have Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn participating in the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal. And in fact, Owens went on Twitter, and I just assumed that this was done as a troll move, and not that he's aware that it's legit or he's pissed at WWE, although I would be pissed at WWE if I were him and they were sticking me in a battle royal. But I assume this is just Owens trolling. He went on Twitter, he posted a screen cap. He was watching one of the previous Andre battle royals at WrestleMania, and so he tweeted a screenshot and just said, "Tape study." As though anybody watches tapes anymore. But imagine building your brand, building your show around those two guys. And they built it around AJ as well, but Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn have been two constants in the main event scene on SmackDown now going back to what? Last summer, probably? Time sort of blends together with all the same shit when you see the same stuff over and over again, so I could be wrong, but probably going back to at least last summer is, you know, the stuff with Shane McMahon and Kevin Owens, and then Sammy was sort of interjected, I guess at Hell in a Cell, Sammy was interjected into it, he rescued Owens, and for months now, these guys have been at the forefront of the main event picture on SmackDown, and now here we are weeks away from the big climactic show of the year, WrestleMania. In another dimension, this would be setting up some kind of a tag match with Owens and Zayn against Daniel Bryan and Shane McMahon. Very obvious now, that's not going to happen. And so, you think, well, something with Shane and Owens and Zayn, or... apparently not. If this is to be believed, they're going to stick them in a battle royal. They're so close to WrestleMania, and how do they pay all of this off? All of the Owens and Zayn involvement in the main event... by sticking them in the battle royal? After 6 months, 8 months, whatever it's been, of them being part of this storyline in the main event? I mean, if it happens, I think it doesn't speak very well to the decision makers over there on SmackDown. Wouldn't surprise me. But I'm hoping this falls under the category of rumor and nothing more, because... forget the fact that it would be a slap in the face to those two guys to not be doing something more meaningful at WrestleMania, to be two of 28 other people, or however many people end up in that battle royal. But imagine, you know, just creatively, that's the best you can come up with. I mean, if that happens, the state of SmackDown, it doesn't speak very well, I think, to the state of SmackDown. If that's the best they could come up with for two guys who have been... at the top of the card now for months, if that's where they end up at WrestleMania. I think that would be completely ridiculous. The greatest Royal Rumble, that's what they're calling it, not what I'm calling it. We all know what the greatest Royal Rumble was. But the greatest Royal Rumble is coming to Saudi Arabia, April 27th at the King Abdullah Sports City, which is north of Jeddah. I know we have some listeners actually who live in Saudi Arabia who listen to this podcast who are probably very excited, who are probably anxious to get their tickets. I don't know if tickets are already on sale or not. I mean, the show is a little more than a month away, so I suspect they probably are on sale. But this is part of a new 10-year partnership that they have signed to hold multiple events over the next decade in Saudi Arabia. And they are promoting the greatest Royal Rumble match, 50 superstars, 5-0. Up to this point, I can't think of another battle royal, let alone Royal Rumble, that WWE has ever done that's had more than 40. I know they've done a few 40-man battle royals over the years. I vividly remember one on a Coliseum video back in 1992. And I know they've done, obviously in 2011, they had the 40-man Royal Rumble match that Alberto Del Rio won. 50, though, I can't recall. I mean, WCW used to do those 60-man, three-ring World War III battle royals, which were a giant clusterfuck. But as far as WWE goes, this is probably the biggest match of its kind that they've ever done. And there have only been two Royal Rumble matches that WWE has ever done that were not televised, and both of them ironically happened in 1994. Owen Hart won one of them at Madison Square Garden, literally days before the Royal Rumble show, where he kicked his brother Bret's leg out of his leg. And The Undertaker won one in Osaka, Japan in May of that year. That one was an 18-man Royal Rumble match. Now, we don't know if this one... and by the way, on that show, he wrestled... I thought this was an interesting little trivia note when I looked up the show, but that same night, before he won the Royal Rumble match, Undertaker wrestled the singles match He wrestled a gentleman by the name of Jinsei Shinzaki, who WWE then signed to a contract and rechristened as Hakushi. I saw that name and I'm like, I think that was Hakushi. And I looked it up and sure enough, that's who it was. And he was wrestling. He was one of the people that were brought in to wrestle on the card that night. And WWE, I guess, was impressed with him. And that's how he got a contract. So anyway, we don't know yet if this is going to air on television, if it's going to air on the network, live, on demand. I don't care if it's live or on demand. I just think it would be a shame for this not to air on the network. This is the sort of thing that they should be airing on the network when they do special events like this. I mean, I thought when the network was first conceived of, this was one of the ideas behind it, is that they would have the power to broadcast special events like this from all over the world. They've done this before, you know, with the Beast in the East special, and I'd like to see them do the same thing with this one, but we don't know. I think the chances are pretty good, though, because in the press release, they specifically say broadcast details will be made available soon. So it's going to broadcast somewhere, we just don't know where, if it's locally or if it's going to be broadcast globally. If I had to venture a guess, I would say it does end up on the network, maybe on demand. And it should. They should be airing more things like this on the network. Now, this means that WWE is running the Superdome for WrestleMania next month, right? We already know that. And they're running an outdoor stadium in Saudi Arabia a few weeks later, which apparently holds over 60,000 people. Then if that Australian pay-per-view that I talked about last week comes to fruition, and the rumor there is that they're going to make the announcement probably at WrestleMania, the night of WrestleMania, they may put up a video announcing this big Australian pay-per-view that they're going to be doing in October. And they're doing that in a stadium that can fit up to 100,000 people. Then in January of next year, they're hosting the Royal Rumble at Chase Field in Phoenix, where the Arizona Diamondbacks play, which is good for about 50,000 people. So WWE is showing lots of love for stadiums lately. Sort of the way they do business now. Pretty much with everything. Bigger is better, right? Pay-per-views. They're longer than ever before. There's television content. There's more content now than ever before. And they're running bigger buildings and bigger stadiums. And hey, if you can pack the people in, then why not? But yeah, bigger is better. That is the mantra these days with WWE. We learned this week that Hillbilly Jim is going into the WWE Hall of Fame this year. I'm not going to lie. I thought Hillbilly Jim was already in the Hall of Fame. I think back to that era. I sort of lump all those guys in together. I thought he was already in. Hillbilly Jim always came across, even on that legend, especially on that Legends House show, but he always came across as just being the nicest guy you've ever met. He just seems like a nice man. I remember the vignettes, you know, when I was a kid and they first introduced him with Hulk Hogan. Hulk Hogan took him under his wing and, you know, for as big a star as Hulk Hogan was at that time, he sure did associate with a lot of duds. I mean, no offense to Hillbilly Jim, but he wasn't exactly a big star. Took Hillbilly Jim under his wing, Tugboat, Brutus Beefcake. Not that Beefcake didn't end up getting pretty over on his own with that barber gimmick. But they tried so hard to have Hogan give all these guys the rub. But that was probably the highlight of Hillbilly's career. That and King Kong Bundy with all the midgets at WrestleMania 3. Bundy beating up Little Beaver is probably the reason why Bundy's never been brought back to WWE since he left in 95. Kevin Dunn just couldn't let it go. Hey, look, if somebody attacked a member of my family, I'd hold a grudge too. So Hillbilly Jim, you know, he had the best entrance music. The best entrance music. Don't Go Messing with the Country Boy. Great song. It's always very disappointing to go back and watch old footage on DVDs or on the network. At least it used to be this way on the network. Maybe they have the rights to it now. But you would hear that music dubbed over by some generic knockoff. A poorly done generic knockoff at that. Not even good. And that, I don't know if that may be a Jimmy Hart song. Maybe he owns it. I don't know what that whole situation is or was, or if it's still being dubbed over to this day. But they better play that song when he comes out for a ceremony. If you're somebody who uses the Coco Beware argument as a way to bash the Hall of Fame, well, you put Coco Beware in, they could put anybody in. You know, I do feel bad for Coco. He's sort of become the poster child. And he had a decent career for himself before he came to WWE. It's not like he only wrestled in WWE and didn't have any success. So, but people always go to like the Coco Beware argument. Hey, I think we ought to throw Nikolai Volkoff in there too. If you're going to bash poor Coco, let's bash Nikolai. Nikolai Volkoff is in the WWE Hall of Fame. Hardly my idea of a Hall of Famer. But if you're going to use that argument, I guess you could also say the same for Hillbilly Jim going in. But I'm long past the point of caring about that. Like, we know what the WWE Hall of Fame is. Every time, I feel like every single time somebody like this is put in, we all have the same debate. People have the same argument. Oh, does he deserve it? He shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame. How is he a Hall of Famer? It's the WWE Hall of Fame. There is no criteria. There's no playbook to look up the rules. There's no qualifications. It's not like a membership society where you have to meet the checklist of requirements. There are none. It's in the mind of one person. And, you know, he being Vince, if he feels that Hillbilly Jim made certain contributions to the company and doesn't remember him being a pest and, you know, wants to sort of pay him back for all of his loyal service over the years, he'll put you in the Hall of Fame. He's done this before with people. Put his dad's limo driver in the Hall of Fame. Though I think he promoted some shows. But in any event, he's going into the Hall of Fame. He did PR for them also for many years. So it wasn't just that he wrestled. Like, after he retired, he for many years, actually, I think it might have been like a good decade or more, he was doing public relations stuff for WWE. So never heard a bad word said about the guy. Never read a bad word about him in any of these books or shoot interviews or anything like that. Plus, you know, Hillbilly Jim is part of that old Hulk Hogan rock and wrestling cartoon, which is either up on the network or I know for a fact it was. I think they pulled it after the Hogan tape controversy. I don't know if they ever put those cartoon episodes back up. Probably not. But he was part of that whole cartoon, and that was a big deal. If you grew up a fan of WWE in the 80s, Hulk Hogan's rock and wrestling, that was a big deal back then. And I saw a stat, it was on PW Insider, and I couldn't believe it, but they mentioned that every character from that cartoon, with the exception, I believe, of Hillbilly Jim, was already in the WWE Hall of Fame. Hogan, Andre, Superfly, Junkyard Dog was on that show, Captain Lou, Wendy Richter, even Tito Santana, he's in the Hall of Fame. Roddy Piper, Iron Sheik, Nikolai Volkoff, Moolah, Mean Gene, Bobby the Brain, they were all part of that cast of characters in that cartoon. And now Hillbilly can join them because they're all in the Hall of Fame and now he's in there as well. The location has been set for the All-In show that Cody and the Young Bucks are financing, self-financing on September 1st. They made the announcement at the end of their latest installment of Being the Elite. The show will be taking place at the Sears Center in Hoffman Estates, Illinois, although they call it Chicago, so I think it's another one of those Paradise, Nevada or Las Vegas, Nevada type deals. But they're calling it Chicago. The building can hold just shy of 12,000 people, and they're shooting for 10. That was the goal. So we know Cody and the Young Bucks are going to be on the show, obviously. They're the ones financing it. Kenny Omega is going to be there, Marty Scurll. Stephen Amell, the actor who actually was the one who made the announcement in the Being the Elite video, he'll be there. Tessa Blanchard, those are the only names I've seen confirmed so far. There's no card yet. We're still many, many months away, obviously. They're going to need more than that, though. They're going to need more than the names I just listed to come anywhere close to 10,000 people. You know, if they can get some of those New Japan guys, New Japan is probably in the best position right now outside of WWE to do a show with 10,000 people in this country. That's how hot that brand is right now. And I know Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks would technically count as New Japan talent, but I'm talking guys like Naito or Kota Ibushi. If they can get some of those guys on the show, I think that would help a lot. New Japan, I think, screwed up big time by not running a bigger building in 2 weeks. They're doing that show in Long Beach. They sold out that show in, like, what was it, 20 minutes, I think, for a 5,000-seat building. So, lesson learned. Hopefully they learn their lesson, and next time they'll double the size, because as hot as they are right now, and obviously the hardcore base of wrestling fans who like that product, they're hot enough and strong enough and rabid enough right now. If you pick the right city, I think easily New Japan could pack in 10,000 or more people in a building right now in this country. I don't think there's any other company, with the exception of WWE, at the moment in the U.S. who could do that. So they kind of screwed the pooch, I think, by running a smaller building. That's the show that's going to have Mysterio against Liger. I think they're doing the Golden Lovers, right? Omega and Ibushi against the Young Bucks on that show. It's going to be a big show. There's a lot of interest in it. So I suspect next time they'll run a much bigger venue, but you know, this show, look, as far as the 10,000 goal that they have, I think they'll come close. I'm not, I can't sit here yet and tell you that I think they're going to do it. I still don't think they do it. Unless they have more names or they put together some amazing card and they've got plenty of time to add people to the show. But the way things are right now, I don't see it. I do know one guy who lives nearby who might be able to put them over the top. Question is, does he want to do it? If I had to make a prediction right now, I would say that CM Punk does do this show. He does at least make an appearance, whether he wrestles or just shows up, cuts a promo, whatever. You know, I know he's friends with the Bucks, and they've been trying, as they should. They should absolutely try, as hard as they can, to have their friend do a solid and come do the show. And I think CM Punk will. I know he's going to fight between now and then if he doesn't get killed. I think that he'll definitely make an appearance at this All-In show. They would be insane not to promote it in advance. I know, you know, CM Punk making a surprise, everybody would lose their minds. But, you know, for a show like this where you're trying to attain a certain number, if they can get him, they've got to promote that in advance. And I'm just thinking, like, imagine them promoting a CM Punk versus Kenny Omega main event to headline that show. Now, I know, you know, in storyline and everything, the match that would make sense would be Cody against Omega. And I figured, you know, when they first announced this, that that would be the main event for that show. But Cody against Omega, I don't think is enough. I think Punk against Omega, first time ever, last time ever, once, one time only, would be just the attraction they need to get enough people into that building. I think for sure that would do it. And you could sit and make the argument, well, you know, this is only a small segment of the audience. Most mainstream people, they don't even know who Kenny Omega is. How can you say something like that? If we've learned anything recently, I think what we've learned from, you know, the examples of ROH and the examples of New Japan and all the Bullet Club stuff and everything, yes, it is a niche segment of the audience, but there is enough of them and they are rabid enough that, again, you have to pick the right city. I think it's smart for them to do this in Chicago because it's centrally located. People can fly in from different parts of the country. It's right in the middle. You're not doing it on the West Coast. You're not doing it on the East Coast. It would have been very easy to do it in LA or to do it in New York. But I think Chicago, which in and of itself is a wrestling-centric city, I think Chicago is well known for their fans being very enthusiastic. But I think just the location of it is very smart. And I think you're going to have a lot of these people willing to pay money for airfare and for tickets to fly themselves in. I think it would be very smart for these guys, being Cody and the Bucks, to almost build a weekend out of it the way the WWE does with all of its WrestleMania-themed events. I heard something about some kind of podcasting convention. That's exactly the sort of thing they should be doing. I think that's very, very smart. They should announce signings. They're going to be doing stuff, I think, with the Pro Wrestling Tees store. They have an actual kind of brick-and-mortar store that's not too far away, and I'm sure they'll be doing autograph signings and appearances and photo ops. That's exactly the sort of thing they need to do. You do that, and you get yourself an attraction like a Punk to be on that card in the main event, and then I think you do 10,000 people, no problem. Because I do think there are enough of those hardcore fans out there who would be willing, with the right attraction, and, you know, making it a kind of a fun day or a fun weekend like that, to fly in and to be part of something that they see as being special. Right now, this is a one-time-only thing. This is not meant to be a new promotion. This is not meant to be a recurring tour of some kind. This is a one-shot deal. This is going to be a special event. It's up to them to make it feel as special as possible. You make this thing feel special, I think you get people to come in. Raw from last Monday, very quickly, just a few notes on that show. We have two more matches that were made official for WrestleMania on that show, neither of which was much of a surprise. Kurt Angle will be teaming with Ronda Rousey against Triple H and Stephanie McMahon. And The Miz will defend his Intercontinental Championship against Seth Rollins and Finn Balor in a triple threat match. I've heard some rumors that that match may grow into a four-way or a five-way. They may add people. I don't think you need to add anybody. I think just keep it as it is. I mean, I guess if Samoa Joe is going to be able to come back and they want to throw him in there and make it a four-way, that I'd be okay with. Because Joe, not only does he need to be on that show, he really should be in a at least somewhat prominent position. You know, so putting him in a championship match, I think, would qualify. But I don't need this match to expand to six, seven different people. I'd say just keep it as is, or if Joe is ready, you want to throw him in there, fine. But I think those guys that are already in there, that's more than enough. I think they'll go in there and have a great match. Now, the coach was in the news for all the wrong reasons this week. Jonathan Coachman, poor him. I mean, this happened just a few hours before he was going on the air for Raw Monday night. Actually, several ESPN, and former, in this case, ESPN personalities were named in a sexual harassment lawsuit. Although Coach, even though his name came up, he's not a defendant in the suit. He himself is not being sued. But his name did come up in some stories about him being a creep. But really, I didn't read anything in there that would rise to the level of castrating the guy or causing him to lose his job. Like, in one case, he allegedly texted a female coworker about what kind of music she liked, and she told him that she had a boyfriend, and he never texted her again. She never heard back from him again. Oh, no. Off with his balls. Like, I read that story. I'm like, okay, what's your point? Why would you even put that in the lawsuit? I guess they're trying to paint a picture of him as being some kind of deviant who's trying to, like, you know, ask inappropriate questions that ultimately will lead to whatever, you know, in your mind you think he's actually out for. But I read that story and I actually laughed. I was like, is that it? Is there something missing here? Because from what I'm reading here, he asked her about musical interests and she kind of blew him off and then he never got back in touch with her. So I fail to see what the issue is there. But he also allegedly sent another woman photos of himself. What kind of photos? I really don't want to know. And told that woman's colleagues that they were together. He led them to believe that they were an item. Now that does sound creepy. You're going to start sending photos of yourself to women and telling people, hey, we're together, when you're really not. That's a bit creepy. And I did think it was also bizarre. And look, this is just my thought on this whole thing. I remember when Coach left ESPN, it was very quiet. I think he was fired. I don't think it was his choice. He got axed from the network, and then he was laying low for a very long time. And I always thought it was very bizarre that he was just sort of randomly axed by ESPN. And I read about this, and it makes me wonder if there is some smoke to all this. You know, were there other things going on, and perhaps they wanted to cut bait with the guy? I don't know. But that other story is it's like, soon you're not going to be able to shake hands with anybody in the workplace without being accused of sexual assault. It's like, if I ask somebody to PayPal me, they might take that the wrong way and accuse me of sexual harassment. I did laugh at some of the Welcome Back Booker T memes after the news broke. I did think that was funny. Poor Booker. It's like, just when you think you're out, they pull you back in. But Coach will be fine. He's not going... Unless some other bomb drops that we're not aware of, you know, just based on what came out and what I was reading, it's like, he's not going anywhere. Coach will be just fine. But on this show, Kurt Angle and Stephanie McMahon had a very interesting opening segment in the ring where Stephanie was talking about Kurt's family, and she said to him, you got kids, don't you? And Kurt said, yeah, I got five. And as many, many people have already beaten me to the punch and pointed out, Kurt actually has six kids, if you count Jason Jordan. Poor Jason Jordan. As if it isn't bad enough, the guy is hurt. He has to miss WrestleMania. And now he's been disowned by his father. Again. they had a whole segment at the beginning here to set up the mixed tag for WrestleMania. It did end with Ronda Rousey getting physical, and she gave a Samoan drop to Stephanie McMahon. Hopefully that's not her finisher. So there are rumors. There are rumors of the mixed tag at WrestleMania possibly headlining the show. It is under discussion. It is under consideration that Kurt Angle and Ronda Rousey against Triple H and Stephanie McMahon could close the show. And I think that would be just the most hilarious thing if Stephanie McMahon gets the credit for being the first woman to ever headline a WrestleMania over all of the other women they have on the roster, who always talk about, oh, how special it would be for them to, you know, one day be in the main event of WrestleMania, and, you know, Sasha Banks when I was a little girl, like all that stuff. And for it to be Stephanie McMahon to get the credit for being the first woman ever to headline Mania. I mean, it wouldn't be the least bit surprising to me, but I think it would be hilarious all the same. Asuka beat Nia Jax on the show again, tapped her out. And then post-match, we had this very emotional backstage sit-down that Alexa Bliss had with Nia where she was trying to comfort her, but all she was doing was making her feel like shit. And Nia was crying, and you know, if you cannot all see where this is headed by now, as if I haven't been talking about this now for the last 7 weeks, if you still can't see where this is headed, then you're blind. The Nia Jax babyface turn is nearly complete. Asuka will be challenging Charlotte in short order. And in fact, this week, I would be stunned if it didn't happen this week, where she comes out on TV and formally challenges Charlotte for the championship at WrestleMania. We had John Cena and Goldust. This was very weird. And I'm all for featuring Goldust more, a little bit more than he has been featured. I think Goldust is still in very good shape and still has something to contribute. But, you know, John Cena is in the middle of this storyline where he's trying to get to WrestleMania and he's in the championship match tonight at Fastlane. He's wrestling for the WWE title. And he's in the ring on this show and all of a sudden Goldust interrupts him. And Goldust comes out and he starts talking about his dream of, you know, being in the spotlight at WrestleMania. And it's, you know, my job tonight is to shatter your dreams. And then he kicks Cena in the balls. And then, of course, they had a 3-minute match. Cena beat him with one AA, and that was the end of Goldust. So this was total time filler. It wasn't particularly good. The people didn't know what to make of it. They didn't really react to it. It was just a very bizarre segment. Well, I guess it's appropriate since they called Goldust the bizarre one. But yeah, very, very bizarre. Just sort of like, hey, we got to do something with John Cena. What should we do? Hey, you, Goldie, come over here. I wouldn't be surprised if I just reenacted the exact way that match came together. That's how Honky Tonk Man won the Intercontinental Championship. He was in the hallway. They're like, hey, what about that guy? And look at this guy's been, this guy has made a career, 30 years, this guy has made a career out of being the greatest Intercontinental Champion of all time. It was because he was in a fucking hallway at just the right moment. Otherwise, he probably would have been a footnote. Matt Hardy. Finally, I have some interest in talking about this Matt Hardy-Bray Wyatt storyline. Matt Hardy is taking things finally at long last to the Hardy compound. They showed the Hardy compound in a video segment that was shot in part by Vanguard 1. They had drone footage from over the Hardy compound in Cameron, North Carolina. Bray Wyatt was in the ring after a hard-fought 40-second win. And they showed this, and Matt Hardy's house got a bigger reaction than anything else on the show up to this point. But they are doing an Ultimate Deletion match. Actually, the Ultimate Deletion match is done. They filmed it on Thursday in Cameron from Hardy's home. Jeremy Borash, who is now with NXT, was there helping with the filming. Exactly, I mean, when Borash was first brought in, I think a lot of us talked about the fact that, hey, he could be really helpful now in terms of, you know, assisting with any of the Hardy stuff. If they do want to film stuff from the Hardy compound, because he was front and center for all that stuff with the final deletion and, you know, all the stuff they did in TNA. So yeah, apparently he was there. He was helping with the filming. There's no word on when it's going to air. I would suspect it will air before WrestleMania, not as part of WrestleMania. I mean, I guess they could air it as part of WrestleMania. Would kind of suck for Matt, though, to not be able to come out live in front of the crowd if they did that. But I guess on Raw at some point in the next 2 weeks. I'm gonna say that they will promote it tomorrow for the following Monday. So whatever that Monday is, what is that following Monday? That is March 2019. March 19th. I was gonna say 2019. I think probably the 19th, if I had to venture a guess, is when that match will air on TV. I hope so. I can't wait. This is what I've been waiting for. Ever since Matt brought the woken stuff, broken stuff, whatever, to WWE, I've been waiting for this because everything up to this point has been an absolute bore. It has been just a complete drain on this show. I don't know who to blame. I don't know if it's Matt. Because remember, we had heard Matt has a lot of creative input. Vince McMahon trusts him. He's giving him creative input into his character and what they do on the show. Well, if that's true, then he bears some responsibility also for some of this stagnant garbage that we've been subjected to. Which tells me maybe he doesn't have as much power over this as we were led to believe. But this is what I've been waiting for, and I can't wait. I think this is going to be a lot of fun. Nothing has leaked as far as any cameo appearances. I would expect Jeff Hardy, you know, Brother Nero. I would expect Senor Benjamin, probably Queen Rebecca. I'm sure the whole cast of characters will be there. I'm more curious to see if anybody else pops up. That could be kind of fun. So yeah, Ultimate Deletion is coming. According to PW Insider, word backstage at Raw last Monday was that the current plan for Sheamus and Cesaro at WrestleMania was for them to face a team that is, quote, not currently a team. And when I read that, my first thought was, Braun Strowman is a man with no match. I guess he's in standby mode right now, just in case of anything, but he is a man with no obvious match unless they just do him and Elias again at WrestleMania. So he's kind of waiting in the wings. And if he's able to make it back in time, and they don't add him to the Intercontinental title match, you've got Samoa Joe. Why not put the two of them together, at least for one night, and you can do Joe and Braun as a tag team? I think they'd make a pretty badass tag team. Doesn't stop them from doing singles stuff. They could still be a tag team and wrestle singles matches. And also, if Joe comes back and is not 100%, maybe being in a tag team match might take some of the pressure off and not be the worst thing in the world for him. So, I would not mind a Braun Strowman, Samoa Joe team at this point. I still think it's ridiculous that they have nothing concrete for Strowman, as prominently featured as he has been for months and months and as over as he is. It's like what I talked about before with Owens and Zayn. And I know a lot of people are sick to death of what they've been doing on SmackDown now with the Shane McMahon, Daniel Bryan, Owens and Zayn stuff, but those guys have been front and center in the main event now for, what, 6 to 8 months? And if they end up in an Andre Battle Royal, I mean, what a waste. What a payoff. So the fact that they don't have anything for Braun, and the fact that we were deprived of a John, possibly deprived of a John Cena Samoa Joe match, although I guess I don't know that that was ever planned for WrestleMania. We were surely deprived of a feud between them before Mania because of the injury. I'd love to see Cena Joe. You know, putting them together in a team is not what I would call the ideal scenario, but it's one that I think could work. Now, Paul Heyman ended the show. He headlined the show this week with a promo. Brock Lesnar was not there. Shocking, I know. But I guess that's part of the story also, is that Brock doesn't care. He's, you know, got his contract. He has his dates. He doesn't give a shit about you and I. I don't see how this is the storyline, given that that's been Brock's MO since he came back to the company in 2012. All of a sudden, it's like some great new storyline. Brock Lesnar doesn't care. It's like, it took them, what, 5 or 6 years for us to figure this out? I think we all knew that already, and we either like Brock or we don't. I don't think it's going to change anybody's opinion of him. But Heyman came out. He did the best he could. He talked again about Roman Reigns and his bloodline. A lot of the same stuff we heard from Heyman the first time when they were building up the Roman-Brock match for WrestleMania back in 2015. Roman did come out. He once again used the word bitch that he's so fond of doing. And he said, look, I know Brock is going to be in Detroit next week. I'm going to be there. I'm not interested in talking to him. I want to fight. And that's how they ended the show. They're doing the best they can. I think it's all going to be in vain at the end when they get to New Orleans, but they're doing the best they can. And they will have some kind of a face-off, Brock and Roman will, tomorrow night on Raw. Now, speaking of Roman Reigns, I'm going to mention this very quickly and I'm going to move on, because to me this is still a non-story. And I've told you guys that this is a non-story week after week after week about this John Bravo guy and all the rumors that evidence is going to come out implicating Roman Reigns, that he does steroids and drugs and receipts and emails. And here we are. It's now March 11th. I don't know how long this story has been dragging out for. This guy supposedly has been, this must be the longest video ever put together, because this guy has been putting a video together seemingly for weeks now, assembling all of the evidence and whatever the hell else it is he claims he has. We've got the smoking gun proof. The video's coming. The video's coming. This guy thinks he's Paul fucking Revere. Still no video. But what we did have this week was something that was released that mentioned Luther Reigns. You remember Luther Reigns, who used to be in WWE? This was back during the Ruthless Aggression era. This was like 2004 SmackDown period. Luther Reigns was apparently implicated as being a client of this Richard Rodriguez guy, and everybody jumped on this and said, oh my god, John Bravo is such a moron, this guy confused Roman Reigns with Luther Reigns. I'm not convinced of that, and I think the guy may have posted something on his social media account that's acknowledged the fact that they're two different people and telling everybody just to be patient. So I don't think it's a case where this guy thought Luther Reigns was Roman Reigns. I think everybody is blowing that out of proportion. But I also still have not seen a single thing that would make me care one iota about this story. Not a single thing. He is milking this for all that it's worth. And I've said this 2 weeks in a row now. Shit or get off the pot. I can't believe that this story is sucking up as much oxygen as it is. Everybody made such a big deal about this the other day. I'm like, I don't care. I don't care. I don't even care at this point what they come out with. They could come out with a list of three different things that Roman Reigns did 2-3 years ago. Who gives a shit? Who cares? Seriously, who cares? Wrestler does steroid. What a shock. What a surprise that would be. Let's tar and feather the guy. I don't care. And if anybody thinks that anything that comes out here is going to be bad enough that it boots Roman Reigns out of the WrestleMania main event, nothing will change. And that's really all I have to say about this. And tomorrow, he could come out with this long-anticipated video and have emails and stuff. And look, the only thing that might come out of this is that if it can be established that Roman knew this guy, it just makes Roman look like an idiot. Because he came out very defiantly, very decisively, weeks and weeks and weeks ago with one statement that said, I don't even know this guy. He could have just come out and made a very basic statement, but he went above and beyond and said, I've never even met the guy. I don't even know the guy. So if they can establish he did, it makes Roman look like a moron. That aside, this guy's getting exactly what he wants. He wants everybody talking about him and going to his channel and thinking he's got, this treasure trove of information and he's some big shot. And hey, good on him. He's convinced an awful lot of people to give him the time of day. But beyond what I've said here, I don't really care to do that. Really quickly on the Cruiserweight stuff, there are Cruiserweight tag team titles reportedly coming post-WrestleMania. This is according to PW Insider that says the titles have already been designed, and they are going to be debuting them sometime after WrestleMania. And I saw Shane Helms, I saw the Hurricane on Twitter, post something. He would support, he said, having trios titles instead of just regular tag team titles. And I agree with him 100%. I'm not a fan of adding trios belts to Raw or SmackDown, like the main roster guys. But I think with 205 Live, as they continue to build that division, if they are committed to doing that, and given the talent they have on that show, I think it could actually be a lot of fun, and it would be something different. That was kind of the point that he was making. You know, you could just add another set of just regular tag belts, but why not try something a little unique, being that we already have, you know, two sets of regular tag team belts. There's rumors of maybe there being women's tag team title belts added at some point in the not-too-distant future. Why not do something a little bit more creative and have a set of trios titles on 205 Live that are exclusive to that brand? It's the sort of thing you can't see anywhere else. You can't see it on, you know, NXT or Raw or SmackDown or anything like that. And I think there's a lot of truth to why that would be such a smart idea. When they have the trios titles in Lucha Underground, we've seen some pretty fun matches there. I loved it when they had the belts on Angelico, Son of Havoc, Evilise. There was a period where they were challenging and defending those belts, and that was a lot of fun. Plus, you got to see Angelico dive off a balcony every single week like a crazy man. So I agree with Shane Helms. I would much rather see them debut a set of trios belts than tag team belts. And that's not the only new championship either that WWE is introducing. I'll talk about that here in a second. But the semifinals of the Cruiserweight tournament are now solidified. It will be Mustafa Ali against Drew Gulak and Roderick Strong against Cedric Alexander. And I look at these four and I say to myself, who's going to WrestleMania? Who's walking out of WrestleMania the new Cruiserweight champion? And you can't go wrong really with any of those four guys. Gulak has been doing some of his best work. Mustafa Ali, I heap praise on him weeks ago. I told you guys to keep an eye on him if you're not giving 205 Live a chance, if you've not really paid too much attention to any of the Cruiserweight stuff. Not that I pay attention to it every single week, but he's somebody who keeps my attention when I see him. He's a very talented guy. And you have Roderick Strong. We all know about him, how talented he is. And then Cedric Alexander. You know, it's tough. When I look at this and I say, who do I think goes to the finals? Who do I want to see go to the finals? Like I said, you can't go wrong with any of these four. I think Gulak gets the short end of the stick. If I had to rank them, he'd probably be at the bottom of the four. You know, it's tough. It really is. It's tough. I could see Cedric and Ali I'm gonna go ahead and say that the finals of WrestleMania will be Cedric Alexander against Mustafa Ali. And I think, by the way, that's going to be a kick-ass match on the kickoff show. Who wins? You know, Cedric seems like he's been set up for this for so long, but I would give it to Mustafa Ali. If it were me, I don't know. I like his work. I like his stuff. I would give it to Ali. I wouldn't hate it at all if they gave it to Cedric, and God knows, I mean, they've set him up for it, and he's got the lumbar check, which I think is one of the best looking finishing moves in the entire company. But hey, Mustafa Ali has that inverted 450, which, I don't know, defies the laws of physics how a human being can do something like that. So kind of the dueling finishes there. You can't go wrong with either one of those guys. But I think it'll be a Cedric Ali final at WrestleMania. That's the one that I would do, and if it were me, I'd put Ali over at the end of the tournament. Unfortunately, there's another cruiserweight who is not going to WrestleMania now and likely ever, and that is Rich Swann, who was on Twitter this week, and he was saying that after his independent bookings are over that he's already booked for, he's planning on retiring from wrestling because he lost his dream job. So if WWE was his dream job and he doesn't want to wrestle anywhere else, if he was more of a WWE fan than a wrestler, if that's how he sort of viewed himself, and now the dream is dead and he wants to go do something else, then hey, more power to him. If he wants to go stock shelves or work in IT or go back to school and get a degree or whatever, hey, that's up to him. It's his life. He can do with it what he wants. But look, don't put yourself in a position to get into trouble the way he did and you won't get fired. I mean, I know he wasn't convicted of anything and his wife sort of backtracked on the story, but you had multiple witnesses who saw what happened. This is not like a private issue where it's only her word against his and now they're on the same page and nothing happened. It was a misunderstanding. You're an idiot if you go in public, if you go out in public and do what he is alleged to have done, where there are other people who witnessed the incident, who then report it to the police. You've got to be smarter than that to not put yourself in a position like that, especially when you work for this company. That was the one thing from the very beginning of this whole thing. You know how WWE is about these things and how sensitive they are, and now there's the women's revolution, and now this guy is accused of putting his hands on his wife. What did you think was going to happen? I would like to think it was just a mistake that he made. This is not who he is. He lost his cool. He did something he shouldn't have done. He regrets it, and now he gets to move on with his life, and maybe one day he'll be working again for WWE. It seems like he's given up on that as an idea and he's just going to retire from wrestling. Okay. It's a shame because he's a talented guy. I hate to see him go, but it is what it is. But don't put yourself in a position like that when you work for this company to be out in public doing stupid shit that might get you fired. Then you won't lose your dream job. See? See how easy that works?
I'm actually not wearing pants, and that's how I watch NXT every single week.
A bunch of spoilers here with regard for plans to take over New Orleans, so skip ahead if you don't want to hear any of it. Bobby Fish, unfortunately, was injured at an NXT live event this past week. He had surgery on Thursday to repair his ACL, which is going to put him out for up to 6 months, which absolutely sucks for him. So what happens now? He and Kyle O'Reilly are the NXT Tag Team Champions. They're not being stripped. Instead, it looks like the plan is for Adam Cole to take his place and to team with Kyle O'Reilly to defend the titles. So, a future Shock reunion here. They are going to defend those titles in a triple threat match at TakeOver in New Orleans against the final two teams in the Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic, which will be the Authors of Pain and the team of Roderick Strong and Pete Dunne, replacing Tyler Bate and Trent Seven in the tournament. They were originally supposed to be in it. And while I would love to give all the titles to Pete Dunne, he's already got one. And Roddy, you know, Roddy is in the Cruiserweight tournament. He may well end up going to WrestleMania to challenge for the Cruiserweight Championship. I don't think he will. I think he'll fall short. But I don't think those two need to be winning the tag team titles here. In fact, I think Cole and O'Reilly probably retain and end up winning the Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic, because with the injury to Bobby Fish, the plan now is to just crown the winner of the tournament WrestleMania weekend at that TakeOver show. Originally, it was going to be the winners of the tournament go on to TakeOver to challenge for the title, so things now have had to be a little bit tweaked. But I think Future Shock ends up winning the Dusty Classic and keeping the belts. I just can't see AOP winning them because they should be main roster bound post-WrestleMania. Possibly even the night after WrestleMania. I could see them popping up on TV on Raw or SmackDown that week. Now, this also means that Adam Cole is pulling double duty at TakeOver because he is going to be involved in another championship match that night. And this is what I alluded to earlier when I mentioned the WWE was not only planning on introducing tag team belts on 205 Live, but they are introducing at long last a new championship, a secondary championship in NXT. At the tapings this past week, William Regal made the announcement that they are going to be introducing the NXT North American Championship. And the first NXT North American champion will be crowned at TakeOver New Orleans in a six-way ladder match. And that ladder match will include, get this for a lineup, EC3, Killian Dane, Adam Cole, Ricochet, Lars Sullivan, and the Velveteen Dream. Now, number one, I'm very happy, finally, that my wish has been granted and we're getting a secondary belt that's been long overdue in NXT. And number two, that's a hell of a lineup for a ladder match. That's a hell of a lineup even for a regular match, let alone a ladder match. You put Ricochet in a ladder match? Holy crap. I love how to this day, by the way, and I don't even do it on purpose. Like, ever since I watched that episode of Seinfeld where they reenact the Kennedy assassination, but they reenact it with Newman and Kramer, I say the word Ricochet the way Jerry did on that episode. If you remember, he goes, and the bullet... And the spit, because it was one of the members of the Mets who spit at Kramer, and he goes, it ricocheted. And for whatever reason, to this day, I have to stop myself because I say it the same way. So damn you, Jerry Seinfeld. Damn you to hell. But no, that's a hell of a lineup. And you know, WWE did have a North American title many, many years ago. I knew that they had a North American title. I had to look up what the lineage was and who the champion was. What I didn't realize is that they basically gifted the title to Ted DiBiase when he first came into WWE in 1979. This was long before the Million Dollar Man gimmick. He came in just as Ted DiBiase. He was a babyface. He came in and he was anointed the first ever North American champion. Title, I don't think the title lasted more than maybe 2 or 3 years. Maybe a handful of people had it. So it's sort of, in a way, sort of a footnote in history. But for NXT, this is their first ever secondary title, first ever North American title. Very curious what the belt looks like. Who do I think should go over? I'm picking the Velveteen Dream. And there's a lot of talent in that match. And I'm not usually a big fan of debuting somebody on TV in a match that they don't win. But I'll make an exception in this case. I think the winner should be the Velveteen Dream. I think he needs that belt. I shouldn't say needs it, but I think for him, it would do him a world of good to have that championship and just sort of enhance his act right now. I don't know. Killian Dane doesn't need it. EC3 doesn't even Ricochet. None of these other guys scream to me like, oh, they must put the belt on him. He needs it. Like, I think Velveteen Dream as the North American champion, defending that title against other people, I think would be a great idea. Adam Cole would be another fine choice. I thought about that, but I think Cole retains the tag titles, but then falls short in the ladder match. So that's just my early prediction, and not even a prediction so much as who I would put the championship on. I'll do predictions when we get closer to the show, but very excited that we're finally getting a secondary belt there, which I think is something they need. And, you know, this TakeOver lineup, WWE accidentally posted the full TakeOver card on their Facebook page for a couple of hours before they took it down. The card listed was Johnny Gargano against Tommaso Ciampa in an unsanctioned match, which makes sense given that Gargano is supposedly banished from NXT. It would be way too soon to reinstate him, so for it to be an unsanctioned match that William Regal gives his blessing for makes sense. And these guys being in a no DQ grudge match is exactly the type of stipulation that that match needs. The six-man ladder match, which I already mentioned, that's on the show. The finals of the Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic, a three-way, I mentioned that already. Ember Moon defending the NXT Women's Championship against Shayna Baszler. And Andrade Cien Almas defending the NXT Championship against Aleister Black, which has already been confirmed by WWE. That is a smoking hot card right there. Top to bottom. And these TakeOver shows, they always deliver. you know, some of them are better than others. Some of them are like, ah, I wouldn't call that one the best takeover ever, but that was still a damn good show. I have yet to see a takeover card that has disappointed me. I look at this one and I say, I think it would be impossible for this show to disappoint me, but I think this could very well go down very easily. Not surprisingly at all, this card could very well go down as the greatest takeover card they've ever put together. You know, we'll find out that night. I got my ticket. I'm glad I got my ticket. There was some debate amongst our group. You know, people wanted to go to the ROH show, which I think is that same night. That's the problem you run into at WrestleMania weekend. Now, there's so many events and there's only so much time. You can't possibly go to every single show or afford to go to every single show. You got to make some decisions. And I'm sticking with my decision to keep my ticket for NXT, especially after seeing that card. Abby Laith, better known as Kimber Lee, who we saw in the Mae Young Classic, was released from her NXT contract this past week. I didn't even realize she was under contract. I haven't heard anything about her in months. I just sort of forgot about her. Out of sight, out of mind, I guess. And she wasn't the only Mae Young Classic competitor to be cut this week. Sage Beckett was also released. She used to be Rosie Lotta-Love many years ago in TNA. She was the one who sat on Daphne and injured her. And then she lost well over 100 pounds, completely reinvented herself and her career. I assume this is just a case of trimming the fat. I don't think it was anything that either one of them did. They were just sort of casualties of there being probably too much talent right now. And every now and then you got to take stock of the roster and decide who do we need and who do we not need. I'm assuming that these two fell under the latter category of we just don't have anything for you right now. And that sucks for them, especially Kimber Lee, who seemed to have a lot of fanfare when she first came in, all of her work on the indies. I think she'll do fine going back there. I think she'll be okay, but I'm sure for her, it was probably like it was for Rich Swann, right? Probably a dream job, and then to have it taken away from you is no fun. NXT this past week, we had AOP beating TM61 in a first-round match in the Dusty Classic. That shocked me. That really surprised me. I thought TM61 was going all the way. The way they've been sort of emphasizing them more and focusing on them recently. And they got bounced in the opening round. And one of the craziest spots I've ever seen, and it made me fear for his life, was the end of the match when Shane Thorne got powerbombed over the top rope onto the apron. He got powerbombed onto the ring apron, bounced, and fell to the ground. I thought he looked like he was dead. And of course, as we all know, if anybody listens to the commentary in WWE, because they only tell us 5,000 times, that is the hardest part of the ring. Poor Shane Thorne got powerbombed onto it. So AOP moves on. We have Bianca Belair winning in a squash. Mara Rinaldo, when talking about Bianca Belair, said, "You may as well call her Butter because she's on a roll." I think if I rolled my eyes back any harder at that line, I'd be able to actually see my brain explode. Tommaso Ciampa got the Roman Reigns treatment, which is not to say that people were like, we don't want to see you go away. It was actual hatred. It was the kind of heat that Roman Reigns probably wishes he would get on TV. Not the go-away heat kind, but the genuine, I hate you, I want to see the other guy beat you up type of heat. He didn't utter a single word. This was, in a lot of ways, like the Roman Reigns promo post-WrestleMania after he beat The Undertaker. Although, in this case, Tommaso said nothing. Roman had that one line at the end, "This is my yard now," which, by the way, was a money line. That was so great. Ciampa here stayed silent. He was a silent actor here in this segment. He said nothing. Every time he would lift the microphone up to his lips, people would boo. They would chant, "Johnny Wrestling." If he would leave, he came back, then he left again. He saw a fan holding a Johnny Gargano, a Johnny Wrestling sign in the front row. He took it away from him. He ripped it in half. He took his crutch. He started beating on the sign with his crutch. And then he left. And I'm sure this will all end up with Tommaso going to William Regal and requesting a fight with Johnny Gargano. I guess we'll see how they set that up. Main event was Aleister Black beating Killian Dane with the Black Mass Kick to become the number one contender for the NXT Championship at TakeOver. This was a fun match. Yeah, two big guys and, you know, kind of going all out, leaving it all in the ring and lots of near falls. And Killian Dane is going to be a big star. I think he'll do well for himself, but this just isn't the time. You know, he's not as over as Aleister Black. He's not going to be the kind of star that Aleister Black is going to be. He doesn't have the fancy entrance. that Aleister Black and the cool music, and you know, they gave him the total package, obviously, because they see big things for him, and he's the right choice. He's always been the right choice. It'll be Aleister Black challenging, and I expect beating Cien Almas at TakeOver for the NXT Championship. Sad tweet this week is unrelated to wrestling. It goes to @USAToday for tweeting a graphic with its list of the top 10 drunkest states in America. These are the top 10 states with the highest percentage of adults who drink excessively. Number 10 is Michigan. Number 9, Nebraska. Number 8 is Hawaii. Too many Mai Tais, I guess. Number 7, Iowa. Number 6, Minnesota. Number 5, Illinois. I would drink too if I had that many murders in my state. Number 4, Montana. Number 3, Alaska. Number 2, Wisconsin. And the number 1 state with the biggest drinking problem is North Dakota. Look at these people. Look at all you degenerates in these states with your drinking problems. Look at you. New York came in number 20 on this list, which isn't too bad. We only have a moderate drinking problem. My sources tell me that the greatest consumption of wood comes from the state of Connecticut. I think I may know who the culprit is. Let's move on to the mailbag. If you have questions, you can email me, thesolemonster@gmail.com, thesolemonster@gmail.com. I have been out of commission most of this week, and so the emails continue to flood in. I can't respond to everybody, but please know I do read every email you send me, and some of them might even make the show. Just make sure you include your name and where you are from. And this week's mailbag is brought to you, as it was last week, by Mania Crawl 5. It takes place the same day and location as our own meetup in New Orleans, Sunday, April 8th, starting at 11 a.m. at Pat O'Brien's. Go to maniacrawl.com. You can sign up there. You can find out more about how you can donate to the cause. They have all sorts of ways that you can donate, contribute to Connor's Cure. They do a lot of really good stuff with the crawl every year. It's a really cool thing. And the crawl itself is a lot of fun. That's why I think it's kind of cool. We're all kind of starting at the same place. They'll crawl off somewhere else as the day goes on, and we'll stay right there put at Pat O'Brien's. But definitely go to maniacrawl.com and check that out. Dimitri from Connecticut. In watching the current build-up to their WrestleMania match, I can't really see Reigns-Lesnar 2 being as exciting as the first. First of all, I believe Lesnar's last great singles match was back in 2015 at Hell in a Cell against The Undertaker. Since then, he's been mostly phoning it in. Second, Roman Reigns' win at the Elimination Chamber was not met with as much heat as his Rumble win was back in 2015. I'm not sure what that means, but third, perhaps most importantly, there's no Seth Rollins to cash in with the heist of the century. Taking all of those points into consideration, along with this lazy part-timer portrayal of Lesnar, do you think this match will be as physical as the first? Will the people get invested in the match, or could this be WrestleMania 20 all over again? Well, it's not going to be WrestleMania 20, because people were shitting on those guys because they knew they were leaving. I think if they knew Roman was leaving, they would cheer him. Might be the only way to get him cheered. Do I think it's going to be... Look, you said, is the match going to be as physical? It's a Brock Lesnar match. It's WrestleMania. It is a Brock Lesnar, maybe Brock's final match. We don't know for sure, but it could be. But it's a Brock Lesnar match. Every Brock Lesnar match. I don't care if it goes 30 seconds or 30 minutes, which I think would kill him. But if Brock's in the match, yeah, it's going to be a hard-hitting match. Because that's what he does. He goes in there and he's stiff with everybody. He throws him around, he punches him in the head, and you know, knees him in the ribs, and does all the things he does. I've not seen a soft Brock Lesnar match since he's come back. So yes, I think it will be a hard-hitting match. I think it will be a very good match. For all the complaining that people, I think, rightfully do, because it's just not something that they're interested in. I can't fault people if they say, look, I don't like this match, it doesn't excite me. Fine. But the first match they had in 2015 was excellent. That was an excellent match, even before the cash-in by Rollins. So I don't doubt that these two can go in there and have a very good match. Are they going to get booed out of the building? It's possible. But as a match, I think the match will be just fine. I wouldn't say it's one of the matches I'm overly looking forward to for WrestleMania, but I'm not going to turn my back on the match. I'm not going to not watch it. I'm not going to hate on it just because of who's involved. If the match is shit, believe me, I'll call it shit. But I expect them to have a really good match. I don't think it should go on last. And I think one of the things that would be smart for them to do, and I know it's going to be hard because they want to anoint Roman and that's how you end WrestleMania and he'll get the pyro that nobody else gets anymore. But I think they need to resist that urge. And I think one thing that could help these two is to not put them on last. I think that would actually help them. I think putting them on last hurts them if you're so worried about crowd reaction. So I think that's one thing I would do. And I think in the end, the match will be fine. The match will be fine. I just can't really get into, so far, the build. Maybe they'll turn it around when they're in the ring face-to-face. I am looking forward to that first face-to-face with them because I want to see how the crowd reacts in Detroit. I tend to think it won't be very kind. So I think it'll be kind of a train wreck tomorrow night. But I think the match itself will be just fine. Ryan from Tasmania, Australia. I was thinking if Samoa Joe is okay to come back in time for WrestleMania, what if he faces Braun Strowman? I figure they're not budging on Roman versus Brock, and I really don't think Braun should be added to the IC title match. I'm cool with Joe either teaming with Braun against the Bar, or facing Braun, or even adding Joe to the IC match. I wouldn't add anyone else, but I'm fine with any of those scenarios. As long as both guys are on the show and in a somewhat prominent role, especially Joe, then I'm okay with it. Jason in Suriname, South America. When Sami Zayn mentioned Grand Slam last week on SmackDown, I saw it as a seed for them to go after the tag titles. Shane is always in their way, and with the help of Daniel Bryan, they could challenge the Bar at WrestleMania and become Raw Tag Team Champions. This could all be fixed a month later when they get drafted to Raw. What are your thoughts on that? I think the Bar against Owens and Zayn would be a great match. I think that could be a lot of fun. I don't hate the idea, but I also, when I've talked in the past about what I would do draft-wise or shake-up-wise, whatever they call it, post-WrestleMania, I would split Owens and Zayn. So Owens and Zayn have been together their entire career in NXT, on the main roster, Raw, SmackDown. Owens got drafted to SmackDown. Where did Sammy go? He got drafted to SmackDown, too. It's like these guys are inseparable. Whether they're opponents, whether they're partners, and at some point, I think there's got to be some daylight between them. So do whatever you're going to do to build to WrestleMania. Hopefully it's more than just putting them in the Andre Battle Royal, but whatever it is. And when the draft comes, when draft day comes, I think Owens goes one place and Sammy goes the other. I think they got to be split. So, you know, putting the tag team titles on them is not my idea of splitting them up. So it's not something I would do. But I think as a match at WrestleMania, Sheamus and Cesaro against Owens and Zayn, it's fine with me. Beth from Nashville, Tennessee. I was rewatching Triple H's Thy Kingdom Come DVD and specifically focused on him recalling the fallout from the curtain call incident in 1996. How he went from being scheduled to win King of the Ring that year to jobbing out to guys like Ultimate Warrior and Ahmed Johnson. I couldn't help but think how different his career would have been had the curtain call never happened. In your honest opinion, do you think if the curtain call had not taken place, would Triple H's career be different, or would he have gone down the same path that he did? Well, that's a loaded question, an impossible question to answer. First of all, you kind of lumped in the jobbing to Ultimate Warrior thing in there. That happened before the curtain call, and that was just Triple H getting hosed. I think even on his podcast, Bruce Pritchard said that was not the plan. The plan was not for the Ultimate Warrior to no-sell his finish and beat him in 20 seconds or whatever it was. They were going to have at least a semi-competitive match. Warrior would win, and Warrior just sort of came in and did his own thing. That's what he wanted to do, and Triple H, what was he going to do? You know, was Triple H going to stand up to the Ultimate Warrior and say no? So, but that happened before the curtain call. You know, would he have ended up where he is? It's impossible to say. I'm going to say no, and I'm only going to say no because when you say going down the path that he went, I think Triple H, regardless of whether or not he marries Stephanie McMahon and that whole angle happens in 2000 or late 99, I think he still ends up being one of the long-tenured Hall of Fame-level performers in the company who's still there today. Maybe doing more of a part-time schedule, but he's still, you know. And by the way, even without marrying Stephanie, who's to say that Triple H would not have been brought in as some sort of you know, wrestler slash agent, or to do some sort of backstage role or have some kind of input. Because, you know, as he tells the story, Vince was bringing him in on, I don't know if it was production meetings or creative meetings. I think production meetings, long before he married Stephanie McMahon and got involved in that whole storyline. So there was something about him that I guess Vince liked, or Vince appreciated, or thought he was a creative guy. I don't know. That was happening as far back, I believe, as 97. So I think his path would have been similar, but he wouldn't be in the position he is now, where he's the chief operating officer and he's the heir apparent to the throne. If Vince, you know, walks in front of a tank tomorrow, I don't know why I thought of a tank, but I feel like a tank is more appropriate to kill somebody like Vince McMahon. A bus, I don't think, is enough. I think he would live. But if Vince kicked the bucket tomorrow, it's Triple H and Stephanie's show. Right? So if he doesn't marry Stephanie, that doesn't happen. He doesn't take over the company unless he marries into the family. We all know that. And if his career goes a different way, I don't think that happens. If he gets the push that he was planned for in 97, it changes everything. One little change. That's what I find so fascinating about these what-if questions. One little change in this person's storyline on TV could impact everything else. It's like the DiBiase thing. Ted DiBiase was under the impression that he was going to win the championship at WrestleMania 4. That didn't happen. Why did that not happen? Because the Honky Tonk Man didn't want to drop the IC title to Randy Savage. So Randy Savage ended up winning the WWF title, and Ted DiBiase was left out in the cold. One thing leads to another. Everything affects everything. So that storyline in late 99, which Russo, by the way, was not in charge of, that was not a Russo idea. This was right after Russo had left the company. I mean, there's a very good chance that that never happens. Triple H's career goes a different way. He ends up in a different storyline. Maybe the, you know, the Test and Stephanie thing never happens. I mean, you pull one little thread, it affects everything. So, yeah, I think his career would have ended up mostly the same. But the biggest difference is the one thing I think that would not have happened. I don't think he would be in the position he is now of being able to, you know, being about to kind of take over the crown. So he should be happy that things worked out the way they did. Let's see here. Josh from Victorville. Booker T was on a pretty good run after he had won the King of the Ring, and it seemed out of nowhere he left and went to TNA. Do you know why he left WWE? He didn't think... Now, that was around the time... That was 07. So that was the whole Signature Pharmacy scandal thing. A whole bunch of wrestlers got wrapped up in that. Booker was one of them. Booker got named in that. He got suspended. And if I remember, I don't think he was very happy about the way that all went down. I think he felt WWE didn't do enough to kind of have his back on that thing. And, he said he didn't do anything wrong. And I guess the company, in his view, just didn't look out for him. And that hurt his reputation. And so he asked to be let out of his contract. It wasn't a case where he got terminated, released. He asked for his release, if I'm remembering correctly. I also think that was around the time he got... There was a whole bunch of things that happened at the time. He went from SmackDown to Raw. I think he was still King Booker on Raw, but it was never the same. And I don't think he was very happy about moving to Raw at that time. Especially if Triple H was on the show at the time, I could see why. So both those things, I think, happened around the same time, and it just made him very unhappy, and he said, I don't want to be here anymore, and he left. Jad from London, England. You've often said that you think the year 2000 was the best year creatively for WWE. In Stone Cold's nearly year-long absence while recovering from neck surgery, The Rock and Triple H carried the company. Not to mention Kurt Angle had, in my opinion, the greatest breakthrough year in company history. And yes, I put him over Brock Lesnar in that category. With that said, if the year 2000 was WWE's best year, what would you say are the five WWE pay-per-view events from that year that we should all go out of our way to watch or rewatch? I do think that creatively, 2000 was their best year. There was a lot of fun stuff. A lot of man, they were loaded with talent, man. They were stockpiled with talent that year. And that's without Austin and without Undertaker for a good chunk of the year, too. I'm going to put these in date order. These are not ranked by quality of the event. I'm just putting them in the order from, you know, when they happened. But the five that I would tell everybody listening to go back and watch, or if you've never seen it, go on the network right now and watch them. Royal Rumble 2000, which I think top to bottom is still probably the best Royal Rumble pay-per-view that they've ever done. Not the best Royal Rumble match. I'm talking overall top to bottom card was that show from Madison Square Garden. One of the coolest entrances too, with the taxi cab above the entranceway. I'm so pissed that entranceway is gone. They renovated MSG. That little small aisle isn't there anymore. They can't do that. But I would say Royal Rumble, Backlash. Backlash was a really good show. Backlash had Rock, Triple H in the main event. Austin came out. Huge reaction. Rock wins the championship. They had a Jericho-Benoit match on that show that was really good. They had a light heavyweight title match. I still to this day remember the finish with Scotty Too Hotty and Dean Malenko. It was, I think, a DDT, right? I think it was, off the top rope. That was really good. Even the comedy stuff. They had a comedy match with Big Show and Kurt Angle. Big Show came out dressed up as Hulk Hogan. He was the Showster. I mean, there was a lot of fun stuff on that show. So Backlash would be on the list. Judgment Day was a shorter card. Not as many matches because they had an Iron Man match that went 60 minutes. But that Iron Man match is my favorite Iron Man match they've ever done with Rock and Triple H. That was where Undertaker debuted as the American Badass at the end. And Louisville went nuts and lost their minds. Jericho Benoit, I think, again, had a match. I think Shane... Who did Shane wrestle? I think Shane McMahon had a match on that show that was kind of entertaining. Anyway, that was a show that you should definitely look up. Fully Loaded. Fully Loaded. Check that show out, too. Rock and Chris Benoit, Triple H and Chris Jericho, Last Man Standing. Just for those two matches alone, that card is worth going back and watching. And SummerSlam. SummerSlam 2000 had the very first TLC match. Rock, Triple H, and Kurt Angle in the main event for the championship. Taz and Jerry Lawler had a fun little match. I think that was the one where Jim Ross broke the candy jar over Taz's head. Shane McMahon had a match. I think that was the match with Blackman where Shane fell backwards 50 feet. The guy's absolutely out of his mind. So, yeah, those would be my five. Royal Rumble, Backlash, Judgment Day, Fully Loaded, and SummerSlam. And it's kind of ironic because here I am saying, oh, 2000 was WWE's best overall year. You have all these great events. You would think WrestleMania would be this outstanding show. WrestleMania that year was a very missable show. I don't think they had a single one-on-one match on that entire card. You talk about multi-man mania? Holy shit. Every match on that card was a three-way or a six-man tag or a fatal four-way. It was insane. But just the show itself, it just wasn't very good. So, in a year that you would think WrestleMania would be this outstanding show, it really wasn't. Let's see here. This comes from Sean. I've been rewatching past WrestleManias on the network and WrestleMania... Oh, this is funny. The WrestleMania 2000 main event always confused me. It just seemed like WWE had no idea what they wanted to do. Do you know what their original plans were for that WrestleMania before deciding on the Fatal 4-Way? I had forgotten that I cut and pasted his question in right after the one I just talked about. My impression has always been that Rock and Triple H in a singles match was the plan, or that was the direction they were building to, but they wanted Steve Austin to do a run-in or just be a referee or do something. And just physically, he wasn't able to. He wasn't cleared. His neck, I think, was still in a halo. So he couldn't do it. So they pushed it back 1 month. That's why it happened in Backlash and not WrestleMania. But then it was going to be Rock, Triple H, Big Show, and Chris Jericho. Chris Jericho was originally going to be in the Mick Foley spot in that Fatal 4-Way. He was on one of the first pay-per-view posters that came out. His face was on it, but then they changed their plans again. And it ended up being Mick Foley. Now, Mick Foley had lost a retirement match the month before. He legitimately thought that was it. He was done, at least, you know, for a while. He didn't think he was going to be back the very next month, for crying out loud. So he got called back because they decided, you know what, we'll do a McMahon in every corner. And so that was the plan that they went with. And so, yeah, their plans for WrestleMania 2000, it seems like changed a few different times before they settled on the whole McMahon in every corner idea. Thayer, hope I'm pronouncing that right, Thayer in Michigan, buy or sell on which you think is better and leads to a more entertaining show, a heel general manager or a babyface general manager? It depends on so many different things. I want to buy on babyface general manager and sell on heel just because I think the heel thing has been so overdone. But the thing is, like, when you have the right characters and you have the right story and it's not completely overdone, having a heel GM can be very entertaining. I mean, you think back to Austin McMahon. Now, McMahon wasn't a GM, but it was kind of the same thing. Vince was the heel authority figure who was trying to take out the rebellious babyface. Now, at the time, it was a very unique concept for the show. It's not something we had seen before, so it worked. Plus, the two of them were just great. I mean, Vince to me is the greatest heel of all time. And, you know, peak Attitude Era Austin was who he was, so it just worked. So that's proof that it can work, but again, it's just been done so many times that after a while, it's like, you just ask yourself, like, if this guy hates this person so much, then why does he keep them employed? You know, like, it's just such a basic lapse of logic to me. You could make the argument back in 1998, Vince McMahon was no dummy. He was in the middle of a wrestling war with WCW, that WCW was winning for a long time, and Austin truly was this guy's meal ticket. He was truly a once-in-a-lifetime irreplaceable performer. So, Vince McMahon not firing Steve Austin, because, as Austin would say, I'm your meal ticket, you're not going to fire me. Even though Vince, I think, once did fire him, but it kind of makes sense. You can actually stretch the bounds of logic a little bit and say, you know what, if I were Vince McMahon, I wouldn't fire Steve Austin either. I would just make his life a living hell. But I don't want to fire him. This guy makes me a lot of money. I don't want this guy walking into WCW. Here, today, you don't really have that argument to fall back on, right? Because they've made it very, very clear that it's all about the McMahons. Every single person on that roster, aside from them, is expendable. Everybody else is just a cog in the wheel. They're part of the brand. If one person goes down with an injury or one person gets fired, no biggie. Life goes on. They'll just plug somebody else in. The show goes on. There is nobody on that roster at the level of a Steve Austin. And there's no competition that they're really overly concerned about. Oh, if they fire somebody, where are they going to go? So you don't have those same arguments anymore. I don't know why, if Shane McMahon hates Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn so much. I know Daniel Bryan's the GM, but Shane is the commissioner. He makes all the decisions, supposedly. Why has he kept these guys around for the last 9 months if they're such a pain in his ass? Why hasn't he just gotten rid of them? Why hasn't he talked to Stephanie and says, here, take them back. I don't even need anything in return. Here, take these two off my shoulders. So, I don't know. The heel GM thing, it just doesn't work the way that it used to. It's been done far too often. I look at the example William Regal has set in that role in NXT. That, to me, is exactly what an authority figure right now should do. He's not out to get you. He's not out to screw his own talent over, because what the fuck sense does that make? He's not even on the show every single week. He only shows up when there's an announcement to be made. If there's a big wild brawl, he'll come out and try to break it up, and he'll make those faces that he makes because he's got these great facial expressions. And so Regal doesn't bother anybody. He doesn't eat up a lot of oxygen. He's there when he needs to be there. He's fair but decisive, and the show is not all about him. Every other show is about the McMahons. Shane McMahon, Stephanie McMahon, Vince McMahon. Right? It's all about the McMahons. NXT, it's not about anybody but the talent. It's not about Triple H. It's not about William Regal. He's just there to facilitate certain things that need to be facilitated, and that's it. You know what? I miss that. I'd like to see more of that. I'd like to see that on the main roster. Kurt Angle. Kurt Angle is a babyface. We've had a babyface GM on Raw for a year. Okay? And that's cool. That's great, because we haven't had to deal with Stephanie McMahon every single week. But, you know, I could do without Stephanie coming out and browbeating Kurt Angle and making him beg for his job and pretend that he'd be destitute without it, which goes to what I was saying before about how it's all about the McMahons. So that's kind of the long-winded way of saying I'm buying on the babyface GM and I'm selling on the heel, because I don't think they should ever be the focal point of the show, ever. I just don't think that's what people want to see. People don't tune in to see the general manager. Who cares? Jack Tunney. People didn't watch WWE to see Jack Tunney. He wasn't that attractive. He showed up on TV to read a prepared statement when there was something to announce. When two people fuck shit up and he had to unfuck it and fix it. I didn't know you can unfuck something, but okay, whatever. I'll roll with it. But when there was a need, he was there. I like that. That's the way it should be. Let's end here with Jay in the UK, buy or sell for WrestleMania 34 weekend. Ooh, this is a toughie. Johnny Gargano versus Tommaso Ciampa, or AJ Styles versus Shinsuke Nakamura? I don't know why I have to pick one over the other. I don't know why you're making me do this, Jay. I thought you and I were cool. I don't know why you would do this to me, but if I had a buy on one, you want to know something? I'm going to buy on Gargano and Ciampa, and I'm going to sell on AJ and Nakamura. And it's not because I'm not looking forward to it, or because I don't think they're going to have a kick-ass match. Believe me, a motivated AJ, I mean, AJ's always motivated, but AJ has wanted this match for so long. I remember him doing an interview saying he went to Vince McMahon like 8 months ago or something and said, I want this. Like, he requested this be his match for WrestleMania. I can only imagine what he's got up his sleeve. It's going to be great. But that being said, Johnny Gargano has been on another planet for a number of months now. He in NXT, and I'm sure this will carry over to the main roster, and I look very much forward to the day that we get an AJ Styles Johnny Gargano match. But he has this thing where everything he touches turns to gold. This guy can do no wrong. He has put in performance after performance that is just outstanding. He just got done with Andrade Cien Almas, who also deserves a lot of credit, having, you know, arguably the greatest main event match or match of any kind in the history of all of the NXT TakeOver shows. And think of all the great matches that we've seen on these TakeOver cards going back to 2014 when they first started these shows. He's just an incredible professional wrestler. Everything, the wrestling, the facial expressions and mannerisms and his ability to tell a story. I mean, he's not known for his great promos or anything like that. He's not knocking him dead there, but he is the quintessential babyface. You cannot hate this man. He is somebody that you just want to root for. You want to see him do well. And now this story with Ciampa, which has been building for a long time, and it's building to this unsanctioned type match. That's the match, honestly, that's the match I'm looking forward to most right now for that entire weekend of shows. TakeOver, WrestleMania, that's the one that I would say if I had to rank them, I'm looking forward to that one the most. So begrudgingly, I will do something I don't usually do, which is vote against AJ Styles, and I will buy on Gargano and Ciampa. Keep sending in those questions, thesolemonster@gmail.com. Don't forget, we are now available to stream or download on Spotify. I've gotten a lot of great feedback from you guys who have been listening on Spotify. It's a lot easier for you to listen. You use it all the time, and now you get to listen to this podcast, and it's great. So I love hearing that. So hop on Spotify and check out the Sound Off on there. Stitcher Radio, iTunes, we're on all the usual platforms. On iTunes, you can leave us a review. We are a 5-star rated podcast. Thank you for all the positive feedback there. That's incredibly helpful for the show. I will likely not be back tonight, as I said earlier, for a Fastlane review. I won't rule it out completely. It's just I don't know where I'm going to be. I don't know how tired I'm going to be. I don't know anything anymore. But if I could do it, I will. I wouldn't watch for it, though. I'll be back next week, and that'll be episode 539, brand new episode of the podcast then. So until then, be well, stay safe, have yourselves, if you are celebrating next weekend, have yourselves a fun St. Paddy's Day. Have a pint for me, and I'll see you back here again real soon for more Sound Up. Until then, take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solemonster sounds off.
They have Kane in the back. This is what he said. Tonight, I will delight as I enter the abyss with a fellow monster, but it is I who will climb out alone and with a smile across my face. Oh, oh my God. What do they think this is, Shakespeare? I was driving yesterday and some asshole double parks his car in the service lane. I should have cut a promo the way the WWE would script one out for me. Why art thou parking like one's smelly orifice? I wish 1,000 deaths upon thee. Then I could do a fucking tope and we could fade to commercial.
Monster Sounds Off. Since 2007, The Solemonster Sounds Off. Available at thesolemonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solo Monster Sound Off.